The Doctor Is In is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
Hi, Dr. Ray. I love your show.
Let me show you what it looks like to be a holy person, and maybe you'll want to be holy like me.
You just patted yourself on the back.
You seem like an honest guy.
But you're a psychologist. Do you have some advice?
I don't know. I'm not going to tell you what to do.
You're my second favorite Italian person.
I think you have a way of making people feel relaxed.
She needs to feel the consequences of being a jerk.
You know, I was looking for a deeper answer.
Obviously, I'm a failure. Obviously, I'm inept.
Yes. You are awesome. Keep up the good fight, my friend.
Now, from the studios of Living Bread Radio Network in Canton, Ohio, the hometown of Mother Angelica, here's Dr. Ray.
My wife and I, this is a while back. We went into one of those marriage things. You know, you're supposed to kind of zip up your marriage. And I tried to keep a low profile, you know, being the professional counselor type and everything. They figured I was real sensitive and understanding, and I knew these things. The facilitator was asking questions, and I think, and I can't say for sure, but I think she looked toward me to be kind of an informal, sensitive kind of guy. And she said, one of the things about husbands is that we don't know little things about our wives, little details that matter, that are important to our wives. One guy raised his hand and said, well, can you give us an example? She said, yes. For example, do you know your wife's favorite flower? Now, the guys wanted to say anything, because I think they didn't know. You know, I had a smirk on my face because I knew. You know, I didn't want to, like, show them up. She says, Ray, you look like you know. I go, well, yeah. She said, what is your wife's favorite flower? And I turned to my wife. I grabbed her hand, and I said, it's Pillsbury all-purpose, isn't it, honey? Well, I don't know what happened after that particular session, but she wasn't there. I finished the rest of this wedding weekend by myself, pretty much. You know, you have to write those letters to each other. Well, I wrote her letter for her, and then I said, honey, just sign it. Just sign it for me. Don't mean to intimidate you. Just wanted to share a little bit of my empathic personality. Good to have you with me. I am Ray Guarendi. The program is The Doctor Is In, dispensing a potent drug for well-being, Docazin. That drug went off patent 2 years ago. It was very expensive. You got it through your ear. I dispensed it on the program. Took care of Bradus Majoris, Wimp Dad Syndrome, a lot of stuff. Now it is off patent. It is generic. Tricyclonol. If you would like to get onto the program because you have a question about something that matters to you in your life, about a person that matters to you in your life, a faith question that matters to you in your life, an emotional struggle that matters to you in your life, anything that matters to you in your life, 877-573-7825. Now, that's tough to remember, so let me make it easier. 877-57-EQUAL. That's the number. You can call about something personal, something particular, something generic. You know, what about this whole idea of hypnotic regression into a past life? Is there anything to that? Short answer, no. Long answer, we can talk if you want. So, you can also give somebody else a suggestion. Given this time of year, I've had a lot of requests for this, and I want to preface all this by saying I do not have a secretary. My secretary used to be my ninth grade daughter. She's grown up and she's retired from being my secretary. So this is a dialogue between God and Saint Francis. God begins the dialogue. Frank, you know all about gardens and nature. What in the world is going on down there on the planet? What happened to the dandelions, the violets, the thistle, the stuff I started eons ago? I had a perfect, no-maintenance garden plan. Those plants grow in any type of soil, withstand drought, multiply with abandon. The nectar from the long-lasting blossoms attracts butterflies, honeybees, flocks of songbirds. I expected to see a vast garden of colors by now, But all I see are these green rectangles. St. Francis says, it's the tribes that settled there, Lord. The suburbanites. They started calling your flowers weeds. And then he went to great lengths to kill them and replace them with something they call grass. God says, grass? That's boring. It's not colorful. It doesn't attract butterflies, birds, bees. Only grubs and sod worms. It's sensitive to temperatures. Do these suburbanites really want all that grass growing there? Apparently so, Lord. They go to great pains to grow it and keep it green. They begin each spring by fertilizing grass and poisoning any other plant that crops up in the lawn. God says the spring rains and the warm weather probably make grass grow really fast. That must make the suburbanites happy. Apparently not, Lord. As soon as it grows a little, they cut it. Sometimes twice a week. They cut it. Do they then bale it like hay? Not exactly, Lord. Most of them either rake it up or they put it in bags. They bag it. Why? Is it a cash crop? Do they sell it? No. No, sir. Just the opposite. They pay to throw it away. Let me get this straight. They fertilize the grass so it will grow. And then, when it does grow, they cut it off and pay to throw it away. Yes, sir. These suburbanites must be relieved in the summer, right? When we cut back on the rain and turn up the heat. Now, that slows down the growth and it saves them a lot of work, right? You're not going to believe this, Lord. When the grass stops growing so fast, they drag out hoses and pay more money to water it so they can continue to mow it and then pay to get rid of it. What? Well, at least they kept some of the trees. That was a sheer stroke of genius, if I do say so myself. The trees grow leaves in the spring to provide beauty and shade in the summer. And in the fall, the leaves go to the ground and form a natural blanket to keep moisture in the soil and protect the trees and bushes. Plus, as they rot, the leaves form compost to enhance the soil. It is a natural cycle of life. You better sit down for this one, Lord. The suburbanites have drawn a new circle. As soon as the leaves fall, they rake them into great piles, and then they pay to have them hauled away. Well, what do they do to protect the shrub and the tree roots in the winter and to keep the soil moist and loose? Well, after throwing away the leaves, they go out, and they buy something they call mulch. They haul it home, and they spread it around in place of the leaves. And just where do they get this mulch? They cut down the trees and they grind them up to make mulch. Enough, Frank. I don't want to hear about this anymore. St. Catherine, you're in charge of the arts. What movie have you scheduled for tonight? Oh, it's a really, really dumb movie, Lord. Never mind. I don't need to see it. I think I just heard the whole story from St. Francis. Every year they say, okay, you trot that out in the springtime. Where do I get a copy of that? Well, you're gonna have to probably Google it or DuckDuckGo it or something along those lines, because I don't have the wherewithal to send those out. All righty. I got some folks up there that want to talk, and I want to talk. But I got to take a break here. One of my 1, 2, 3, 4 breaks. You know, what a gig. Nice work if you can get it. 877-573-7825. 877-57-EQUAL. I'm Dr. Ray.
Solidarity HealthShare began out of the Christian tradition of neighbor helping neighbor. They're a nonprofit medical cost-sharing ministry in which their members share in each other's eligible medical expenses. Solidarity Healthshare is not insurance, but rather an alternative way to pay for medical costs that adheres to the teachings of the Catholic Church. They'll never share in a medical care that goes against their values and morals, such as abortion, contraception, and sterilization. More information available at SolidarityHealthShare.org or at 844-313-4999.
This is the fasting that I wish: release those bound unjustly, untie the thongs of the yoke, setting free the oppressed, break every yoke, share your bread with the hungry, shelter the oppressed and the homeless, clothe the naked when you see them. You know the kind of thing I'm talking about. It irks me when people say, well, those are social justice things. What do you mean? It's one of those weasel words. This doesn't have to do with sinful institutional structures. These commandments have to do with personal behavior. So when you begin to say that these are social justice issues, you're really kind of evading Isaiah's point, or God's point through Isaiah, which is, no, I expect you to be setting the oppressed free, feeding the hungry and clothing the naked, and, you know, that's for you to do. Don't expect your government to do it. Don't even necessarily expect your church to do it. It's expected that you will do it.
Cresta in the Afternoon with Al Cresta for Eastern on EWTN Radio.
Do you own popular index mutual funds or ETFs? If so, you're automatically owned shares of companies that conflict with your moral beliefs. Ave Maria mutual funds are managed to conform to pro-life and pro-family values. Long-term investors can invest in the no-load Ave Maria mutual funds. The experienced professional portfolio managers make decisions based on investment fundamentals and pro-life values. You can learn more about Ave Maria Mutual Funds today at 866-AVE-MARIA or visit AveMariaFunds.com.
Radio's man for all reasons. Dr. Ray Guarendi, program here. Dr. Zim. A few folks on the line, and as I've always said before, and I'll say it at the top of the program again, you call anytime during the program, and we take calls, not necessarily in their order, although that is a factor, because I don't want to make people wait forever, but also depends upon the actual topic. The emergency. We have an emergency fit line. I mean, if your child is right in the middle of a fit, you can go to the emergency fit line. John from Nebraska. He's confused. He's confused about the whole illegal immigration thing going on at the border. Hi, John.
Hey, thanks for taking my call.
Sure, buddy. You know, you have an interesting take on this. Why don't you summarize it?
Okay, so basically, you got Joe Biden, Catholic, saying, you know, we got these, kids coming over the border, you know, we need a foster program, we need to get these kids over here and help them and, you know, get them into a foster care or something, you know. And I'm hearing a lot of Catholics say no. They're saying nope. Nope, that's not the thing to do. I'm hearing a lot of Catholics and Christians say, sorry, send those kids back. They don't need to be here. And to me, that doesn't sound like the Christian thing to do. It doesn't sound like the Catholic thing to do, to turn, you know, children away, not to foster them, not to teach them, not to help them learn and grow and stuff. So I guess I'm just a little confused. I mean, I understand people have different political opinions, but when we live in one of the richest countries in the world, I don't understand what the problem is here with, helping children, helping them out when they need help.
Okay. Let me share with you some of the thinking that I think is common. First of all, when you have kids coming to the border, especially kids who have, quote unquote, come a long way, one must ask, all right, you're not going to have a 9-year-old walking 380 miles. That's not going to happen. So they're obviously going to be transported to the border. All right, one. Two, a lot of these are not kids. A lot of these are adolescent males. And because of that, there is a very significant risk of drug trafficking. Much of the drugs come in through that southern border. Kids are great to co-opt for that. Three, human trafficking. The cartels use these children. All right, some of them are just flat-out victims. They've been abused on the way here badly. So the question then becomes, is this a good thing to set up something like this that says, okay, get these kids here? Well, on one hand, it sounds like, well, gee, we should welcome the stranger. We should welcome the alien, as our Lord says. But at the same time, what is actually going on for some of these kids? There's no doubt that the trafficking, the horde trafficking is there. There's no doubt that the coyotes, the people who are bringing folks across the border illegally, can misuse them. So the question becomes, if that border's wide open and we say, send us all your kids, we'll bring them in, we'll teach them the Catholic faith, which is a big if. However, bring them in, we're going to welcome them. The problem is, what exactly is happening to these kids in the journey? What is the motive for pushing them through the border? What risks are involved with these kids? And we're not dealing with five-year-olds. And why are there no parents? Where are the parents? Where are the adults? So it's a very complex picture, John, and I see what you're saying. But on the other hand, there are very clear downsides that have to be looked at. So I think that's the best way I could explain some people's thinking on this, rather than simply saying we are xenophobic. In other words, we just don't want anybody in our country that's not us. So therefore, even as Christians, get them out of here. Well, I'm not sure that's the only reason people are responding the way they are. I would be personally very concerned about the kids. I absolutely am frightened to death about unaccompanied minors coming through the border. Obviously, with help getting here, for what reason, I don't know. I can't know. MS-13 is the most vile gang that exists in our culture. And many MS-13 gang members or potential gang members are coming in the southern border. So at some point, it is complex. But I do appreciate, John, I do appreciate the point you bring out, because I think there's a lot of people who think like that, and they can't understand why people of faith wouldn't say, hey, we are here to welcome the stranger. Good point, John. Thank you for the call. Oh, well, Mary, you left. I mean, I have to do a survey someday on the folks who call and then drop what their names are. Pat is calling from an anonymous location. She adopted a special needs child, and this special needs child is now an adult, has been an unraveling life story. Now he wants Pat to help him, maybe some more. Hi, Pat.
Hi. Yeah, and the day after Divine Mercy, where I go to Mass, Communion, Confession, and get consecrated in Divine Mercy, my first thought, well, he's alive. And then I thought, well, I wonder what he wants. And so I went in, and I looked at the message on my phone, and it was, help. I'm homeless, and I'm cold and wet, and I need your help.
How old is he, Pat?
It's like it's been a lifetime. I mean, 35 years of.
Okay, so this is something that you have often, regularly helped him out. You've given him money.
Oh yes, a lifetime.
Okay,
and then
now,
do you think? Months ago,
let me cut in here, Pat. Would you? Because you've pretty much set up the situation pretty well. Your question is: am I wrong? Am I not showing mercy if I don't once again, step in and financially help him out? Is that the crux of it?
Yes.
Okay. You don't want to, right? You deleted the text message.
With a lot of pain and sorrow in my heart. And every night when I go to bed, I just say, Lord, I hope he's okay. I never wanted this for him.
Here's the question you can ask yourself. All of the help that you've given him over the years, has that really helped him?
No, not really. I mean, we thought maybe, but no, in the long run, no. Mm-mm.
So why would you continue to do something that's hurting him?
Because he's hurting so bad, and I forgive him for all the names he's called me and all the abuse, and I forgive all that. I mean, there's some mental here, too. And I know your situation because I listen to you all the time. So you're kind of saying, move on, you've tried, and it didn't work, and he's going to have to pull himself up by his own bootstraps. Is that about it?
That's what I did for me. I can't tell you what to do for you.
I know.
I think, though, that if you say, I've done all these things over many, many years,
yep.
And this poor grown child of mine is a mess.
Yeah.
He doesn't learn. The chances of him pulling it all together are very low.
Yeah.
And the more that I do for him, the more it seems to make it worse. So he is... How old, Pat? How old is he?
Will be 48.
Oh, my, Pat.
This I know.
This is not a 22-year-old.
Like I said, you've
been doing this forever. You have gone, in my opinion, decades beyond the call of motherly duty.
We adopted him when he was 5, and from there it's been a real trip.
I don't doubt that. I don't doubt that his history was horrific. I don't doubt that there was drug and alcohol exposure, and I don't doubt that it affected his brain. So given all that, his judgment, his impulse control, perhaps even his own planning and intellect have been damaged.
Yes.
So given all that, one thing you can probably comfort yourself with is that he says he's homeless, but there are programs, there are places, there are shelters, there are things that he can find, that he can use, as opposed to coming to you and saying, okay, give me $100. Give me $200.
Dry outfit. And the next time it rains, he'll be wet and out of money.
At some point, a parent has to decide when is enough. When is enough? Now, I happen to decide that way, 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 way earlier than you did. Because I knew if I continued to do that, I would be hurting my child. I would just be fueling the bad behavior, the poor judgment, the irresponsibility.
Yeah, I need to hear this. Thank you.
Well,
you're the best.
I don't know what I said, but I do appreciate it. Thank you, Pat.
Say fueling the problem, and that's exactly, yes, that's it.
Well, you got to decide, am I helping or hurting? And if you decide you're hurting, then no matter how much you feel like you want to step in, you have to ask yourself, logically, thinking-wise, is this really doing him good? That's the question.
Yeah.
Bless you, dear. Thanks for the call. Thank you so much, okay?
Thank you so much. Bye-bye now.
All right. One of the obvious signs of a culture deteriorating is the grown-ups, the long adults, people like me and Pat and who are on the other side of life, you know, the other side of the hill, watching the young adults that parents have raised, making a shambles of their lives. It's making a shambles. My dad grew up during the Depression for World War II. Very poor, very poor. My grandmother, grandfather, very, very, very poor. They lived about a block and a half from where Rita Rizzo, Mother Angelica, went to church. But yet there was not that kind of behavioral pathology that there is now. You know, my dad knew guys that, they were rough around the edges, but the drugs weren't there. The total shambles of their lives weren't there. Most of them got married. Most of them had families. Most of them, by and large, had a connection with their own parents. That is really being frayed now. 877-57-EQUAL. I'm Dr. Ray. Love to hear from you.
Father Benedict Groeschel.
I'm operating on the gifts of the Holy Spirit when I don't feel well, even when I'm annoyed, when I'm down and out. During my recovery from the automobile accident, immense numbers of people wrote to me and sent me emails, 50,000. And they told me how helpful they thought my talks on EWTN were to them. I'm delighted, but I want you to know I'm nobody's fool. The talks that were helpful, the sentences that were helpful, the phrases that were helpful came from the Holy Spirit. That's the work of the Holy Spirit. And the styrofoam packaging came from me. I did that. And styrofoam doesn't amount to very much.
EWTN. Live truth. Live Catholic.
What is catechesis and why do we care? The job of catechesis is to reveal all the joy as well as the demands of the way of Christ, says the Catholic Catechism. The way of Christ is summed up in the catechesis of the Beatitudes. Jesus gave us the 8 Beatitudes in his Sermon on the Mount. The Catholic Catechism tells us this teaching is the only path that leads to the eternal beatitude, happiness, for which the human heart longs. The catechesis of sin and forgiveness challenges us. Unless man acknowledges that he is a sinner, states the catechism, he cannot know the truth about himself, which is a condition for acting justly, and without the offer of forgiveness, man could not bear the truth. This is Peggy Stanton, and this has been the Order of Malta's Minute with the Catechism.
Dr. Ray Guarendi, thanks for joining me here at Doctor's Inn, Monday through Friday, 1 o'clock Eastern Time. We are making arrangements to take the TV show Living Right with Dr. Ray down to Ave Maria University. Down there, and oh, that's beautiful down there, spectacularly beautiful. Probably, it looks to be late May, early June. So hopefully I'll have more details on that, giving you a heads up. Because once again, we're going to be doing 4 shows taped with the audience. So we're excited about that. Just one thought here before I address this. René Descartes, now you know René Descartes. He was the philosopher who wrestled with how did he know he existed. And he's famous. Anybody who went to high school learned Descartes' mantra, I think, therefore I am. I exist because I have the ability to think. Well, supposedly, Descartes was at a party. And the waiter asked, would you care for another hors d'oeuvre? Descartes said, I think not. And he immediately disappeared. Yeah, it's one of those intellectual type jokes. Mary couldn't stay on the line. She called from St. Louis. Calling about her son and daughter-in-law. Now, already this is rife with problems, so Mary, if you're listening, you better be careful about what you say to your daughter-in-law about any discipline. I know you're looking at the picture and thinking, why are they doing this? They have three under the age of 4. Now, the son, which I'm assuming is the 4-year-old, she says is sharp and headstrong. Mary, I'm going to disagree with you right off the bat. We have absolutely no idea if he's headstrong. He may be headstrong with them, and that's probably the most often phenomenon. Parents think the kid is strong-willed or headstrong or stubborn or challenging or high maintenance because the kid is that way with them, and the vast majority of the time it is because their discipline is not solid. It's that simple. It's that simple a relationship. Now, Mary says they've chosen not to spank. But what other options do they have to get their son to be more obedient? Well, first of all, even if you do believe in spanking, spanking can't be your main discipline. A little kid a little kid is going to misbehave way, way too much. Several, multiple times a day, 10, 20, 30 times a day they'll misbehave. You can't spank them every time. So, what other options do they have? Now, here is the key line. This is the absolute key line. The parents say that timeout doesn't work. I know that's wrong. It's incorrect, misperceived, and for many reasons. When a parent says the timeout doesn't work, the first reason is they can't get the timeout to stick. They can't do it. They'll try. And Mary described her grandson as headstrong, so therefore that means he resists timeout. So he doesn't stay. He throws a fit, he argues, he comes out, whatever. And they fight with him, they argue with him, and they try to get him to stay, and it's ugly. It's a misfooted dance. So that's the first thing. Second thing, let's just assume that he does take his timeout. Well, probably they're not doing it anywhere near enough. The kid gets timeout when they've had enough. Third, when they say something doesn't work, what they're really saying is it's not making it better as quick as I want it to. If the kid accepts timeout and he stays there, it works. Will it change the behavior? Oh, I don't know about that. That takes a lot longer. For those of you who go to confession, how many decades have you been saying the same sins? How come? Isn't confession working for you? What's wrong here? At least a four-year-old has an excuse. He's four. Mary, their brief view that you've summarized here is probably the template of people who come into my office with preschoolers who say that I can't discipline this kid. This kid doesn't listen. This kid doesn't take discipline. Everything we've tried doesn't work. We've tried it all. I hear that relentlessly, and typically what happens is you got to dig down into their discipline style and see where and how they're falling short. They're not bad people. They're just underestimating what they need to do. Let me do this. I'm going to go to Michelle, and I know the hard break is going to cut us off, but Michelle, We'll take it up on the other side of the break when we get cut off. Hi, Michelle.
Hello. How are you?
I am fine. Wait a minute. Your 24-year-old daughter will not take time out. She won't stand in the corner. Oh, wait a minute. I'm segueing my questions here. Sorry about that.
Thank you for taking my call. Really quickly, let me preface what I'm about to say, that our daughter, her dad and I, we've made tremendous failures in raising her, and where we are in our heartache and struggle now, I attribute largely to mistakes that we have previously made. But very quickly, our daughter is dating a much older man, and he has called and wants to meet with her dad and expresses his wishes to marry her. And while this is greatly concerning, for so many reasons, she has a history of doing this, and we're just very concerned, and we know that she's an adult and she's going to do whatever it is that she really wants to do anyway. What is her parents, what is the step that we should take now that we're on the path that we all are on?
You're going to have to like the guy.
Wow, okay.
If you say to yourself, this is a train wreck.
Yes.
This is a marriage that is you know, what's the guy, 50? 50, how much older is he?
16 years.
Okay, so he's 40. All right. Not crazy, but yeah, pretty good stretch.
Right.
And if you say to yourself, she's going to do what she's going to do, and
right,
his asking us to give our blessing is tokenism, because even if we didn't give our blessing, they're going to get married anyway. Is that a safe? Is that okay? So that's a safe statement. So what you do know is that she's going to marry this guy.
Exactly.
You're going to have to grit your teeth and do the best you can to accept him. if you attempt to convey your disappointment, your mm-hmm. your frustration, your reluctance, your pondering an ugly future, your daughter will just pull away from you, right?
Exactly, and she's already done that, you know, because when she met him and started this, you know, whole thing again, you know, we expressed concern, and we wouldn't be in the situation now. But I mean, she just continues, and perhaps it is because of the objections that we've expressed, you know, and she's pulled away. She's not really talking to us.
Oh, wow. Okay. Stay there, because you have just added a wrinkle to the question. So I'm going to try to iron out this wrinkle on the other side, and I'm not very good at ironing. 877-57-EQUAL is the number to call if you would like to get onto the phone. And Michelle, you stay right there. We'll talk some more.
Father Benedict Groeschel.
There are legitimate differences of opinion in any religion. There are differences of opinion in Catholicism. But in Catholicism, you expect that people will take the teaching of its supreme authority seriously. To go diametrically opposed to those teachings is to not be a Catholic. Someone in the name of Catholicism is sponsoring the destruction of human life, lives of unborn children. And they got the name Catholic on the door. The highest authority in Catholicism in the encyclical Humanae Vitae, Evangelium Vitae, is absolutely clear that no Catholic can support abortion, and that Catholics are responsible to take serious action against legalized abortion.
EWTN. Live truth. Live Catholic.
I'm Dr. Stan Williams, and this is The Logic of Catholicism. Solanus Casey said, "Appreciation is as necessary for social order and harmony as are the laws of gravity for the physical world." There are a lot of things we can't not know. Take gravity, for instance. When you put your foot down, it stays there, unless your spouse pulls out the rug you're standing on. Gravity is not just a good idea, of course. It's the law, a natural law. And you can't change natural laws. They are what keeps the universe in order. For instance, gravity reminds you not to step off a cliff without suffering painful and life-threatening consequences. Ah, law and order. Something to appreciate. Today, tell someone you appreciate God's laws and His order that keeps you grounded. And that's the logic of Catholicism. Explore more at AveMariaRadio.net. Under resources, look for me, Dr. Stan Williams.
So what if I can't spell Armageddon? Not the end of the world. I'm talking to Michelle. She's from the Deep South. I love her accent. Two levels to her question. The one level is going to be the look back level, which she said, as we reassess our parenthood all the way along, we did a lot of things we would do very differently. Very, very differently if we had it to do over again. But it is now. And our 24-year-old daughter has had her share of bad judgments. And her most recent one, in Michelle's opinion, is that she's going to marry a 40-year-old guy. Now, at this point, the daughter is not talking to Michelle and her husband. You there, Michelle?
I am.
And she's not talking to you because you gave your opinion. And she didn't want to hear it. Is that it?
Basically, yes.
Well, now we know. No more opinion, right?
She would really appreciate that.
Here's the thing. If you want to have some kind of healed relationship with your daughter, and especially mm-hmm. this new guy, You're going to have to fake it. You're going to have to be pleasant with him and civil with him and kind with him and with her and take whatever joy you can in their relationship. Hopefully it's, well, I don't know the specifics. I mean, I don't know if the guy's been divorced. I don't know if he's got other kids. But even at that, you still got to kind of be civil and pleasant to him, because what will happen is you won't see your daughter at all anymore. And you can't know then which direction she's headed with this guy, how she's headed. You'll just be on the outskirts. That'll be it. I don't think that's what you wanted to hear. You wanted me to say something for you to convince your daughter to hold off on this, didn't you?
Well, that would be wonderful, except for we've already had the experience of this with her before now. And we know, she's not alone. She doesn't like to hear the word no, nor do I. You know, I want things the way I want them. I can understand and appreciate that. But you would think that she, through her previous actions, would have gained experience. And it just seems, instead of a topic, it's more of a theme. And a continuation, it's just, she's repeating behaviors that have never really led her anywhere good. So, and those are her choices to make. I mean, I understand that God gives us free choices, but when we had expressed this to her in hopes that we would, I guess, come around to her way of thinking, and when we did not, I mean, you know, she just, you know, we got a birthday text, her dad and I both, and that's been it until this guy reached out to her dad, and her dad said, okay, I'll come to you. I will drive to meet you. And then, you know, a couple of days later, she followed up with her dad that she would, he would be welcome to stay with her. And for about 6 months now, that's the most communication we've had. So, I mean, I understand it's our turn. We either fall in line or we fall aside. I get that. But I just do not.
Michelle, you're not compromising your morals. You use the phrase fall in line, which means compromise what we believe. You're not doing that. You very much believe that what she's doing is short-sighted. You very much believe that it's based on immorality, however she got there. Okay.
Right.
She knows that. She was raised by you. She knows where you stand. The fact that she shut you off is what many, many young people are doing nowadays, which is, if you say anything counter to the way that I want to do it, get out of my life.
Right.
And so right now, I think your best bet is to just say to yourself, she's 24. She's very capable of being stupid and short-sighted.
Right.
But we basically are her parents, and we will accept. And when I say accept, I put that in quotes, meaning that you will treat her well and you'll treat him well as best you can, as best they allow you. And even if you do that, she may just decide you're too religious for her and she doesn't like being around you. So that's my suggestion. You can't disapprove to the point where they say, okay, then fine. You don't approve. I'll see you. You have to at least love as best you can, knowing you're not compromising anything. You believe deeply what you believe.
Okay.
All right, sweetheart. Good luck to ya. Is she gonna ask you to be the matron of honor?
Okay. I wouldn't doubt that she makes a post on Instagram and we find out it's a trickle-down effect. So, but thanks for the thought.
All right. I'll talk to you. Bye. I'm going to take this break, then I'm going to go to Bill. Bill has an interesting perspective on something. He's from Moorhead, Minnesota. I have friends in Moorhead, Dan and Kathy, by the way. So, Bill, hang on. I got to take my last break, and then we'll get to you. Dr. Ray.
Brought to you by the nonprofit Seton Home Study.
Hi, everybody. Dr. Ray Guarendi here. You thinking about homeschooling? Seton Homeschooling. 35 years of experience, pre-K through high school. They provide the books, the lesson plans, the counselors, the grading services, the tests. That's right. Well, my wife used Seton, some of our children. And I will tell you this, two of them got perfect ACT scores in verbal. And overall, the Seton students scored more than 100 points above average on the SAT, 27% higher on English and reading. It is a rigorous program. At least now, 1.3 million students are homeschooled. You want to give the very best to your kids? Trust me on this one. Go with Seton. It is a beautifully rigorous academic program. Go to setonhome.org. setonhome.org.
We need EWTN Radio for the reason that Mother Angelica founded this entire enterprise. She always saw this as a spiritual growth network. It was to be an enterprise in media that reached people in all aspects of their life. She saw this as a holistic approach to reaching the whole person in the middle of the world and bringing them truth and life.
Raymond Arroyo thinks Catholic radio is important. So should you.
Do you own popular index mutual funds or ETFs? If so, you're automatically own shares of companies that conflict with your moral beliefs. Ave Maria mutual funds are managed to conform to pro-life and pro-family values. Long-term investors can invest in the no-load Ave Maria mutual funds. The experienced professional portfolio managers make decisions based on investment fundamentals and pro-life values. You can learn more about Ave Maria mutual funds today at 866-AVE-MARIA or visit AveMariaFunds.com.
Thank you for joining me on The Doctor Is In. I'm Dr. Ray Guarendi. Appreciate it very much. Bill's got an interesting take on things. He's calling from Moorhead, Minnesota. This is in response to a call I had at the top of the program from a gentleman who said, as Christians, we should jump at the chance to welcome these children, have them come in. And he doesn't understand why people who proclaim themselves Christians wouldn't say, all right, give us your children. And then I attempted to explain some of people's reluctancies and question marks they would have about children coming across the border by themselves. And again, when we say children, we're thinking 7, 8, 9. Many of these are adolescent males, older adolescent males. So, Bill from Moorhead, how are you, sir?
Yeah, I'm on the line. Can you hear me okay?
You're good and strong.
All right, but what I was saying was that I worked for the welfare department about 45 years ago in Texas, and we provided a lot of services for people that were poor. But one of the conditions of doing that kind of work was that there couldn't be a man in the home. In other words, if there was a husband there, then you couldn't get the money that you needed to support your family. And if the economics were not good, then what were you to do if you were a family? Well, what you had to do was there had to be no man in the home. You know, so when a man approached me, a professional Hispanic man, he approached me once and he told me, you know, this service that the government is providing is what's destroying our community, because it's taking the fathers out of the home so they can get the money that they need to support the children. And I just listened to him because that was my job. You know, I didn't say anything. I didn't say, well, you know, that's a good point. But I, thinking about it over the years now, there's so much of a problem now with broken families. And there's no guy in the home, and I think that relates directly to what you were talking about with all these children wanting to come across with no husband. I mean, with no dad and no mom. And I think that the dad and the mom are faced with this terrible decision. Well, if we go, they're not going to let us in. They'll let the little children in without a parent because they feel sympathy for them. So that's a real issue, and I think it's a problem in our society, and I wanted you to, I hope I said that well enough.
You said it beautifully, Bill, and it's still going on. Back when President Johnson unveiled his war on poverty, one of the objections was, are we going to pay people for not being married? are we going to say it is more financially well off for you to not have someone in the home that you're married to, committed to, because then you can get money? And many people believe that part of this, what you have identified, is a factor in the explosion of out-of-wedlock births. Essentially, financially, the government has taken the place of the father. The government has said, we will give you money if there's no guy around. So much of what the government does has unintended consequences. They don't see the effects. And what happened, rather than supporting someone who was left without a male, what they did was they actually, in many cases, fostered no male in the home. And you see this with the marriage penalty. You see it with Social Security. I've had people in my office tell me that, I'm going to divorce my elderly wife because if I do that, then she can get this from the government. That's sadly wired into the system. You're absolutely correct. I don't see any way that it's going to be taken back because I don't have a whole lot of faith that common sense rules. However, you're correct. It was that way then, Bill, and it's even more so that way now. So, good insight, sir. I appreciate it, and I thank you for it. There is a law, and there's a law called the Law of Unintended Consequences. This law is related to the fact that we're not God. We make laws, we make rules, we set policy, we proceed down a certain pathway, and we don't see the effects. We can't predict them. A small example of this is that with the lockdowns, now there's research all over the place that say lockdowns don't work. They just do not work. They don't stop the spread. They don't do anything. But we thought they did. But what happened was nobody looked ahead to see the effects, for example, widespread social, psychological, physical effects of isolation. Oh, people may have vaguely had some idea that, yeah, this isn't necessarily good, but it won't be a big deal. But nobody predicted, few people predicted the explosion of suicide rates. Few people predicted the explosion of domestic violence. A big one, I saw a recent statistic, 700,000 cancer screenings went unscreened during the COVID response and during the hospital saying, okay, we're not going to do all these things, and anybody wants to come to the hospital, you're taking your life in your hands. So what happened was, and I say, how do you tally that? How do you say, okay, then this many people are going to die because the cancer got a foothold that they would have otherwise screened? I've had cardiologists tell me this. They said they've had all kinds of people in much, much more serious circumstances coming in because they put off what they should have done months before. So, given all that, the law of unintended consequences is at work in about every piece of policy, every piece of legislation. And for someone able to look ahead and say, wait a minute, if we do this, what could happen that we don't foresee right now? What are the possible ill effects of doing this? That's the question. Small example. Children who are back in school are all wearing masks. I had a teacher friend tell me, she said, one of the more squeamish children on the playground panicked because she was touched by another student. And she said, don't touch me, don't touch me, don't touch me, you're going to make me sick, don't touch me. Now, again, first of all, one must ask, are the masks necessary and effective? That's a legitimate question for kids. And secondly, nobody predicted some of the more squeamish kids responding in this way, some of them more fearful now. My wife brought up a good point. She said, what about babies? You know, babies have to focus on faces. They look at faces. My wife said on numerous occasions out somewhere, she saw a baby and she was smiling at the baby. But all the baby saw was a couple of eyes, nothing else. The baby just stared, where otherwise the baby would break into a smile because another big person smiling at him. Who knows? Law of unintended effects. I'm Dr. Ray. Thank you for joining me here on The Doctor Is In. I appreciate it very much. And good Lord permitting, we're going to have a live show tomorrow. Do that instead of Look Back Friday. So walk with God, always.
For information on Dr. Ray's presentations, books, and CDs, visit DRA.com and follow him on Facebook. The Doctor Is In is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.